I laugh real hard when I see the Thunder struggling. I laugh, and then I think back to 2007 when the Seattle Supersonics drafted Kevin Durant second overall. And then in the next year's draft, they drafted Russell Westbrook number 4 overall. And then in the next year's draft, they drafted James Harden number 3 overall and had 3 MVP candidates, multiple time MVP candidates, all at the same time, the same age, on the same cheap deals, and never really realized that dream.
Yeah, if you could have picked, if you were new to the NBA and said, I'm going to pick a franchise that I want to follow for a while and win, who would win the most championships in the next 10 years? Might you have said that?
Runaway. An absolute runaway. And the furthest they got was the finals once.
They never knew what they had in Harden, though.
That's an interesting one, but not entirely true. Now, maybe Daryl Morey, Rockets GM, knew more of what they had in Harden. And not to relitigate that whole deal, but they would not go to his max offer, which is what he wanted.
Well,
instead, what they reportedly offered him was, I believe, a total of $5 million less over 3 seasons.
Still.
With the sole reasoning being, and I've had this confirmed to me, that their GM, Sam Presti, who's one of the best, wasn't because he didn't want to do it. It's because the owners didn't want to pay a single dollar of luxury tax.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
You would have had
to go to the mat for that and say, "This, you don't understand how good this guy is." But I always think that's an indictment. If a guy really blows up somewhere, you didn't know what you had.
Yeah, and I suppose both could be true.
Like you're saying, it was a very close.
But I think the GM wanted to offer it, and their owners, who are awful, frankly, and that's kind of where we're headed here, didn't want to do it because they didn't want to pay a single dollar in tax.
Right.
And the other reason that I've always rooted against them is when I was a kid, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I was a big fan of the 12 and 13 and 14 win Maverick teams. I wasn't. I mean, we'd go to games at reunion sometimes, but I wasn't sitting down to watch all those games. What I did want to watch, though, when they were on TV, usually on the NBA on NBC on Sunday, was the Supersonics, because they had a player whose last name was Kemp, and they dunked a lot. They were a fun team.
The man child.
Exactly. I mean, he was a human highlight reel, and I know he's not the most efficient player in league history, but they felt almost like a cool team to be a fan of because they weren't, you know, the Jazz.
Had a lot of babies, too, I think.
A ton.
Yeah.
So if you didn't want to just be a Bulls fan, you didn't want to just be a Jazz fan, the Sonics felt cool.
Yeah, they were the hip, cool team.
Yeah. So the story of how the Seattle Supersonics ended up in Oklahoma City Thunder is a fascinating one. And there was a documentary made by 2 Sonics fans, I don't know, almost 10 years ago, really pretty much after it happened, called Sonics Gate, which you can watch online. And it tells the story of how one of the current owners, Clay Bennett of the Thunder, and one of the former owners, Aubrey McClendon, of Chesapeake Energy, he was killed in 2016 in a single car crash the day after he was indicted on a federal antitrust for violating federal antitrust laws while he was the CEO of Chesapeake. So
he committed suicide?
It's been ruled as an accident, but he drove about 100 miles an hour directly into a concrete wall. And it was the day after he was indicted.
Seatbelt?
And I don't think that was the end of what was probably going to be the indictments. That I don't know. But those two teamed up to just completely hoodwink the league, the city of Seattle, and the Sonics' former owner, who I believe is the founder of Starbucks. And in that documentary, it details that they just lied. And it was important to, I think it was David Schultz was his name, the former Sonics owner. It was important to him that if he was going to get out of the game, that the next ownership group committed to keeping the team in Seattle, at least for the foreseeable future. That was his sticking point. And they told him, no problem. They gave quotes to media in Seattle, assuring people in Seattle, we're keeping this team here. Well, a couple years later, after the sale had been completed, media got a hold of emails where they're just going back and forth like, I can't believe they're going for this. You know, we had, I think one Clay or Aubrey McClendon flat out said, we have no intention of keeping this team in Seattle. They did some token negotiating with, I think, Renton, Washington, a small, you know, outlying outpost to try to see if they could get an arena built. But they were already down the road with the people in Oklahoma City to get that arena built. They lied to David Stern about it. Clay Bennett was actually fined $250,000 for David Stern by David Stern for lying. But at that point, the team had already moved. And the former owner of the Sonics, Schultz, attempted to sue them, but it ultimately was like, this isn't going to work. They've already built the arena down there. They built a practice facility. They renovated all this area around the where they're going to have the arena. They just lied. They flat out lied and moved one of the NBA's beloved franchises that had a pretty rabid fan base and moved them to Oklahoma City. And then moved them to Oklahoma City and became immediate cheapskates that wouldn't fork over a few million dollars in salary tax to keep one of the young stars they drafted. Meanwhile, a few hours south on 35, Cuban paid more luxury tax than anybody in the NBA not named the Knicks for a 12-year period. You can criticize the Tyson Chandler thing. You can criticize their drafting. It was never about them not throwing everything they could at the Mavericks.
It was never a money, yeah.
Ever.
There was never a money decision.
And this, these idiots steal a team, lie about it, get in, for McClendon's part, got in all sorts of problems in his business situation.
Could have afforded that
no doubt.
Luxury tax. They don't probably get the local TV money that others can.
Well,
but they sell out every game.
They absolutely sell out every game. And I remember defending their decision at the time. Foolishly, because I thought, boy, these luxury taxes are going to get crazy. And you're going to have to pay these repeaters. It's going to be, and it's a small market. Who knows how much money they're making? Well, a few years after that, after the trade, the Harden trade, Zach Lowe, I think from Grantland at the time, got a hold of a memo showing how much every team was making, and they were in the top five or six. They were raking in money on a team that they stole while not being able to pay to keep their players.
That's the disconnect between ownership and fans sometimes is they're very happy if they're in the top five earnings.
Right, and just kind of good.
But if it would be the top 10 earnings, but we would win a championship.
A lot of them don't go for that.
Right, and they don't see the, what do they say, the forest through the trees because they would increase their earnings.
Sure.
You would.
In the long term.
You could probably up your ticket prices. You could sell more jerseys, all that kind of stuff. But.
And so for McClendon's part, the one who died in the single car accident, there's a ton of fascinating articles you can read on just the way that he carried himself throughout his business life. He has almost minor Jerry Jones vibes of just being wildcatter, you know, bought some land when he was in his 20s, developed fracking, seemed to pretty much try to break every single business rule that he was told, don't break this rule.
Mm-hmm.
Worked out real well for him. And then continued that way of doing business right up until it was time to buy the Sonics and then immediately move them. And, you know, it's not a war.
Which was a good business move, perhaps.
It probably was.
Yeah.
It certainly was. But it's not a violent conflict. But I think teams getting moved from fan bases that really, really enjoy that team, that bums me out. I'm certain there's some teams that kind of deserve
it. I was a little Browns fan.
There you go.
That's a
rabid fan base at that time.
That's a state. Yeah, that's one of the premier franchises in the NFL, you know? That's moving the Bears. It's like at that time, it was unheard of you would move a team like the Browns.
And then it usually comes
Seattle
with some sort
seems
of,
different.
It's different, but as you said, they were kind of the cool, you know, it felt cool. And I'm sure that was a big part of the identity
of Seattle.
But yeah,
to the Seattle
fans,
it didn't seem different.
And it usually comes with some sort of cloak and dagger, van in the middle of the night, lying on emails, lying to the commissioner, lying to the guy you're buying the team from.
And this is why people kind of don't care if you're lying about maybe moving the franchise to get yourself a big stadium. And you'll vote for the stadium?
Yeah.
You know how we say those are financially a poor decision to make actually for a community?
Because they will move them? and they have moved them.
If push came to shove.
So that's and then, you know, there was also the stuff when you think about the Thunder. Do you remember, I think it was our buddy Brian Curtis who wrote the article some years ago about how different their approach to media access was than every other team? Like, they just really got adversarial with anybody trying to cover the team. As far as locker room access, which is kind of a weird thing anyways, but there was a story about some local reporter who was trying to file in the locker room on deadline, and he's sitting in a chair that was just unused, and Russ walked over, who of course at the time was with the Thunder. Russ walks over and is like, player chair, hop up. And the guy's like, all right, I need like 5 minutes. And Reggie Jackson, who was on the team at the time, kind of rolled his eyes and walked over and was like, dude, just take my chair. Reggie Jackson was gone within like 5-6 months. They just had this weird insular thing that always bugged me. And their fans bug me. And their ownership bugs me. I have.
That's weird, bro.
Pretty strange.
The pregame.
It's pretty strange. Yeah.
You know, the pregame prayer is just very odd.
Look, there's a reason Mike Miner always called them Vacation Bible School.
Well, it's very, like, the whole arena. First of all, the fans in the seats, too, never leave their seats. Never.
Yeah.
They're sitting in it. Now, I was there for a playoff game.
I was not, and it was still most of the game.
And before the game, when they do that pregame prayer, it's dead silent.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a whisper in the whole place. It's just, it felt the most like, remember the Vice documentary on a North Korea basketball game?
Yeah, with Rodman.
When Dennis Rodman went to visit there.
But, I mean, they didn't earn that, you know? They won 23 games the first year and then 50-plus and made the playoffs for the next several. They don't know.
They struggled.
And I'm glad they're struggling
again now. 365 days, man.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.